Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Steve O'Keefe. He is the founder of an organization called Meritalk, as well as the Mobile Work Exchange. And today's discussion is going to focus in on surveys. And federal surveys, you've all seen them and read them. 5% of people do this, 82% of people do that. 91% of federal employees have smartphones. And I always read these surveys, and I scratch my head and I go, well, how did they conduct that survey? Well, what is a survey? Is it a poll? Is it a questionnaire? Are the responses valid? And I think for my listeners is, if a federal IT professional is asked to participate in a survey, what's in it for them? Can it value them? Can it be any value at all to the other people working for the federal government? And that's why we brought Steve in today to tell us about exactly how to conduct a survey, what a survey means, and especially in the world of the federal IT world. I mean, what value does it have at all? But before we begin, Steve, tell us about your background and how you got that strange, funny accent. Are you from Oklahoma or what?
Hey, John. Thank you for having me on the show this morning. I've been in Washington, D.C. now for 24 years, working in and around the technology space with the federal government, originally from just outside London in England, and not quite sure how I made my way all the way over here to America to work in computers with the government, but that's a story for another time.
So a lot of stories. We can do probably 10 one-hour interviews with Steve, all the companies he's founded and all the success he's had. But let me put you in the position of a federal IT professional. So let's say you're working for the Department of Interior. And, you know, go to work at 9 o'clock in the morning, beat your head against the wall, go home at 5 o'clock at night, all kinds of challenges and problems and security issues and you know, a reduced budget. Someone approaches you and says, well, we want you to participate in a survey. I mean, what's the value of them participating in one of your surveys, Steve?
Well, there are myriad mandates in the marketplace. You've got IPv6, HSPD12. You've got the Federal Data Center Consolidation Initiative, you've got the Cloud First Initiative, et cetera, FISMA, and on and on and on. And so these mandates keep coming out from OMB, and what we want to understand is, are they actually delivering value? In many circumstances, the motto for federal IT should be the beatings will continue until morale improves.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And so what we're interested in understanding is, are we improving outcomes through these mandates? Are we actually moving forward? So, for example, if you look at federal data center consolidation, when we came out with that initiative, I think there were about 930 data centers in the federal government in February of 2010. And that was data center consolidation, which was focused on reducing the number of data centers. Today, there are more than 7,000 data centers, and I would put it out there, there are going to be a lot more data centers discovered before the number starts to go down. So what people are interested in is, sometimes it's difficult to stand up and say the emperor is naked on your own, but through a survey, you can provide your anonymous feedback. We can aggregate that and play back to the decision makers and to the Hill what's going on.
And I think that's an interesting aspect you brought right there. I mean, let's say if I'm working for you over at Department of Transportation, let's say, and I see some things going on that I may not agree with. I mean, if you're a career professional, you may not want to shake the boat. However, you can express your opinions through these surveys, couldn't you? You could say, well, you know, the initiative here was to move to the cloud, and you know what? I think it's costing us money, but you may not want to inhibit your chances for promotion. And this is one way to vent some of your opinions that may not agree with some of the ones that are promoted.
Yeah, I think people are also interested in understanding how others are doing. And so by providing your opinion, and then we aggregate that data, you get a sense for what's happening in other agencies. It facilitates cross-pollination of best practices and maybe best miseries as well.
Best miseries. I mean, I think that's one of the values of some conferences that pop up. Because if you go to a conference with like-minded individuals, you can grab them for lunch and say, well, gee, Steve, I mean, you have the same problems. Am I the only person in the world who's maybe frustrated with this? All of a sudden, there's information exchanged. And you say, well, I saw this Meritalk survey. It said 92% of federal professionals are blah, blah, blah. Do you agree with that? And all of a sudden, you know, the humans going back and forth, it really it creates synergy and truth, I think.
We also use the surveys for testimony. So we routinely testify on the Hill, both on the Meritalk side and the Mobile Work Exchange side, on IT and HR issues for the federal government. And so the decision makers on the Hill, they're not necessarily technology experts. What they want to understand is, are we delivering value? Are we making progress? And if there's no way to measure, then there's no way to motivate.
I always tell my students that when they design a website, it has to appeal to the robots and has to appeal to humans. And I like to focus in on humans. Let's focus in on the humans here with the surveys. Normally with conducting a survey, there's some kind of a consent process involved. So if I went up to 50 dentists in Bethesda and did a survey, that'd be one thing. But sometimes in the federal government, there's restrictions about what they can say and they can't say. So when you ask a person in the federal government to do a survey, is there any consent difficulties here?
Well, I think there are different types of surveys. So there are qualitative surveys and there are quantitative surveys. And so quantitative surveys are anonymous. You complete the data. It's not attributed to you. And there you have it. And so in many circumstances, when we put on conferences, we might hand out surveys. We'll ask people to complete the form, and then we'll provide a $5 donation to USO, for everybody that completes a survey. So there's no attribution in that circumstance. And we also do qualitative surveys. These are based on in-depth interviews or IDIs. We call those beacon reports. And so those would be, in that circumstance, we might interview 20 federal executives on big data. We recently came out with a study called Big Data, Big Brains. And so the photographs of the executives are in the report. And we don't report their specific responses, but we report the 20 in aggregate. And we might quote those executives. So, yes, we would run those through the public affairs office and people would have the opportunity to review.
Yeah, I would imagine with an incentives for conducting or completing a survey, in the commercial world is one thing, but you got to be very judicious with federal IT professionals.
Yeah, absolutely. We do not compensate federal executives for participating in programs.
My next question. I'm working on a somewhat sensitive project over at DHS. And I see this survey that I want to complete. Well, how is my confidentiality going to be protected? Can I trust you, Steve, or how does this all work?
I think that the proof of the pudding is in the eating, right, in terms of those responses. So they're anonymized. We've never had a situation where anybody's felt uncomfortable. And, again, we report that information in aggregate. If we're ever going to break something out, we need to notify those people and run it past them and give them the opportunity to run past public affairs.
I'm not casting aspersions on your character, Steve. I'm just putting myself, if someone works for the federal government, going, well, I don't know, is this survey coming in here? Are they going to track me? Is this going to be Google? Is it Steve Google O'Keefe? I mean, they're going to know everything about me. And maybe there's some things I'm stating here that may disagree with my boss. And so I think people get these surveys and go, well, I don't know.
Well, we haven't seen that to be a problem. But I think, you know, you've also got to look at – there's different types of surveys that you do as well. And, we build surveys that power calculators as well. So recently came out with a cybersecurity census. So we did a survey of 500 people across America, cybersecurity professionals, and we asked them how much experience they have, where they live geographically, their education level, a series of questions. And then we asked them what they earn. And then that powers, obviously that's anonymous information, but that powers a calculator, which means that other cybersecurity professionals can go to that calculator and say, okay, put in their attributes, press a button, and find out whether they're being paid enough. So there's always a trust factor.
Oh, that's something I'd be interested in. Right. I mean, yeah,
there's always a trust factor. If you look at the Mobile Work Exchange, we have a calculator on the site where people can put in the attributes of their commute, press a button, and find out what percentage of their after-tax income they spend on commuting each year. And we've had 38,000 federal employees take that survey to find out how much they spend on commuting each year to make the case for telework, mobile work. And so with that data, we can aggregate and model the federal commute. So when we go to the Hill and the senators want to know what the impact of a gas hike of 50 cents a gallon is on the average federal employee, we can say that the average federal employee is $526 a year worse off after taxes. So these surveys are two-way instruments as well, if that makes sense.
Great. We have to take a break and come back, talk more about surveys and federal government folks and how it benefits them. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Steve O'Keefe. He is the founder of Meritalk and the Mobile Work Exchange. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Steve O'Keefe. He's the founder of many organizations. The two we're talking about today is Meritalk and Mobile Work Exchange. If you'd like to have more information, you can go over to Meritalk, M as in Mary, Meritalk.com. Wonderfully designed website. I'm have all my students go to this website, and it's very, very nicely done, simple, but it promotes exactly what you're talking about very simply and easily. I really enjoyed all of your websites, and the Meritalk one is very nicely designed. I hope you designed that one, Steve. Did you, or who did it for you?
Our creative department designed that. I won't take credit for it.
No kidding. Wow. Well, pat yourself on the back for hiring good people, because as you know and I know, good people in this town, you gotta beat the bushes to try to find them. I don't know how you find them, but it's almost impossible. Let's go back and talk about surveys. So we have surveys from federal agencies talking about the cloud, talking about managing mobile devices, talking about security. Well, that's an interesting topic to bring up. Talking about healthcare IT, another hot topic. Earlier you talked about qualitative versus quantitative approaches. Tell me more about that, and maybe talk about that for our audience, please.
Everybody likes quantitative research, because you can say that, 8 out of 10 owners said their cats preferred Whiskers over the other leading brand. So people want to know, where are we? How do people feel? What's the percentage of this versus that? And I think also, once you get into a broader sample, you can do crosstabs, right? So you can say, civilian agencies said this, DOD agencies said that, or you can say, Gen Y said this, Gen X said that, boomers. People like quantitative research because it's very tangible, there's a hard edge to it. Quantitative research in many circumstances can be more revealing. So if I'm interested in the leaders in a specific topic and they're prepared to put their name to their responses, now not for attribution but in the pool, you can get more depth of a response. You know, in an open-ended response, you can get more nuanced meaning. So they're both highly valuable, and you can use them together in order to get to the big picture, and then also the color associated with opinions.
The big picture for me, when I think of surveys, I guess you can do a face-to-face survey, just walk up to someone. You can do telephone survey, U.S. mail, I guess people use that, or the web. How do you conduct most of your surveys, Steve?
Most of our surveys are executed, or quantitative surveys are executed via the web. We do use clipboard surveys. We did a survey called the Irish Test some years ago.
Well, I can imagine what that is.
Before St. Patrick's Day, we asked people some fairly simple questions about, first off, what their lineage was, and it was amazing. I think
everyone's Irish.
60% of people at this particular shopping mall were of Irish.
We got to throw that one out, huh?
But when we asked them, some simple questions about Ireland, they didn't do so well.
Yeah.
So, and then we used that to power a calculator, which is called the Irish Test, and the article ran in the Washington Post. We had a lot of people take that test before St. Patrick's Day as we ran in. So different types of surveys. Yes, face-to-face. We hand out surveys at conferences and ask people to complete them before they leave. We use the web heavily. When it comes to in-depth interviews, we can do those face-to-face, or we can do them over the telephone. It just depends on what you're trying to achieve.
So the basics of the survey – you contact a candidate, a potential respondent, and you present the questions, and then you record the response, and then the big part here is trying to develop a report or generate some kind of information based on that. And there's big hurdles in each step along the way. So do you start off with the goal? Someone walks up to you and says, Steve, I'd like to do a survey on managing mobile devices. Where do you start?
Well, I think that we have to work out what are the issues that we want to get to. I'd introduce one other type of research, which is what we call open source research. So last year we released a study called the Social Circle, the S-C-I-O-A-L Circle. It was misspelled, which I'm famous for. And so we were looking at the social behaviors of CIOs. And so what we did there was we didn't actually interview anybody. We just went out to Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook and searched for the federal CIOs to find out where they had accounts, and then looked at what kind of activity was going on their accounts, so that you could provide a objective frame which looked at how active they were. Where did that start? Well, that started because a lot of organizations were saying, we should use, a lot of the conferences have been distressed, especially the out-of-town conferences in D.C. And so, the notion was that we would replace face-to-face or other types of interaction, media and radio, with social media. And so what we want to understand first off was, are the CIOs on social media? And if so, how are they interacting? So the net of it is, you know, if somebody doesn't have a television, there's not a whole lot of point in running television advertising.
Right, that's interesting. Let's go back to the old-fashioned surveys of contacting a person and asking questions. I guess the first part is making sure the questions are understandable, if that's a word. And then the second part is, do people complete the survey? And then what about if questions are skipped? I mean, in different types of surveys for very specific scientific surveys, there's some questions you just can't skip in order to complete an accreditation or certification process. Is this true for the general surveys that you do?
Yes, it is. I mean, the first point you made about being understandable, some of our surveys are deliberately not understandable. Right. So what we want to, we're dealing in many circumstances with more complex language or concepts. HSPD 12, we talked about software defined networking earlier. There are a series of these acronyms. And so if you don't understand what they are, then asking you questions about the path forward on those initiatives probably isn't particularly high value. So in many circumstances on more technical surveys, we will deliberately use language which, unless you understand what it means, you're not going to move forward in the survey. If you have partial complete within segments, so let's say, for example, you might have three sections in a survey, you can aggregate and use the data in the first section, even though somebody may not fill out all the sections. But if you have holes, obviously the data doesn't map up.
My wife teaches Latin. We talk about words all the time, and we talk about being a word bully. And I think this is appropriate for designing questions for a survey. You know, if I use the word accreditation, that can mean several things for several different people. You just used HSPD 12. I think in the federal world, most people would probably close to understand what that is, but I imagine there are people who maybe are fuzzy on HSPD 12 and some people who are, you know, can give you a three-hour answer on it.
Yeah, I think, you know, all that is valid information, right, depending on what you're trying to achieve. We were working with the Department of Homeland Security some years ago, and we built a system called the National Cyber Alert System with DHS that was available to all Americans. And so there were, if there was a problem with computers, a virus, a vulnerability was discovered, they would post the information here. And I believe the National Cyber Alert System is still up. And there were two types of alerts. There were technical alerts and there were non-technical alerts. The technical alerts read something like :\C, what you will. They were for technical audiences. That was fine. But the non-technical alerts were for average Americans. And so what I would do is I would get the information from Carnegie Mellon University. I would read it. I'm sort of in this business. And then I would pick up the telephone and I would call my mother-in-law and I would read them to her. And if she couldn't understand them, then I would send them.
That's a good idea. I never thought of that, yeah. Yeah, normal human beings. Right. So let's so John Gilroy hires Meritalk to do a survey on managing mobile devices. So first of all, we set up the goals, what we want to get from it, and try to generate questions that we can measure at the end. Is that the first step?
Yes, I think so. I mean, the first thing to do is to look at what is the need. And so when you're working with organizations, and our research is typically underwritten by a private sector organization, the first thing you want to look at is who's the audience? And the audience has to be the government executive, the government professional in that role. And so what is it that they want to learn? And so that's where we have to start.
I always think of target populations and managing mobile devices. I mean, there may be some CIOs who are challenged with managing mobile devices. I imagine everyone is, or do they bump that down to someone else? I mean, if you take the 135 civilian agencies and get all those CEOs in the room and ask them about managing mobile devices, there are probably some of them who are fuzzy on it, but may have a staff member who is tasked with that. So I think, you know, the target population may be tricky with some questions.
I think that's right, and I think, you know, different topics rise and fall at different times. If you spoke, you know, I know this for a fact, you know, talking about DLP, data loss prevention, last year to CIOs, it was not a priority for them. Today, with the Snowden situation, it becomes a huge priority for them.
You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Steve O'Keefe. He is the founder of Meritalk and the Mobile Work Exchange. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Steve O'Keefe. He's founder of a company called Meritalk, as well as the Mobile Work Exchange. We're talking about surveys and what possible benefit would surveys have for federal IT professionals. If you're asked to do a survey, should you waste your time? Is it a waste of your time? Will you help yourself? Will you help other people in the industry and maybe even beyond the federal government? If you want to have more information, you can go to Meritalk. That's M as in Mary, E-R-I-T-A-L-K.com. It's a good-looking website. In fact, if you're thinking about redesigning your federal website, go to that website and take notes. It's not a bad one at all. Steve, when I think about surveys, you know, I get my little word thing going on and different words and everything, a survey and a questionnaire and a poll. And I mean, how do you differentiate between those three?
I would say that a survey and a questionnaire are pretty much synonyms. They mean the same thing. A poll is usually shorter. You'll often hear these referred to as straw polls. Mm-hmm. So they're cruder in structure. So I think a survey is a more sophisticated product.
So a questionnaire is probably a subset of a survey. Does that make sense, or is it really not related to a poll at all?
I mean, they're all brothers and sisters of one another, I would say. I would say a questionnaire and a survey are pretty much the same thing. And, you know, a poll would be something that's shorter, 5 to 6 questions, something like that.
If I polled folks under 30, they'd be interested in blogs. And I write a blog, I read blogs, and I'm going to blog about this interview. And if you want to see my blog, you can go and type in John Gilroy blog, and you'll find my Tech Tuesday blog and all kinds of stuff. What about you, Steve? Do you have a blog? Is there a blog you can recommend for my listeners to read to gain a better understanding of surveys?
I do generate a blog. It's called My Cup of IT.
Of IT.
And it focuses on IT issues. In terms of surveys, I'm not aware of a blog that specifically follows that, but I could check with our head of research.
No, but it's a funny question to ask. You know, I don't know. Where would you go? Statistician? Would you go there? Would you go social scientist? Surveys are done by anthropologists. I mean, and surveys are by politicians. I mean, it's a tough question, I think. And it has a lot of jaded meaning. I mean, everyone's seen surveys. You go, well, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. I just don't believe that. And then and they have polls coming out of voter stations, and they go, well, I don't know if I believe that. And that's I'm kind of wary, and that's why I wanted to get you in the studio. I wanted, you know, my listeners to know, maybe I should take this survey. Maybe I should share my information with others. I can do it anonymously. Don't have to worry about my confidentiality. And maybe my experience can benefit some poor loser over at HHS who's encountering the exact same problem. And I'm sure there's people at HHS that are frustrated and they can't get things done. And maybe if you're of a transportation, you got the answer, why not share it with them? At least commiserate in the suffering or something, huh?
Yeah, I think that, you know, a common human thread is, I have a story to tell. People want to be heard and they want their opinion to matter. And so in an environment where attribution can be complicated, and there are politics, the opportunity to provide your opinion, to vent, if you will, via a survey is cathartic, and people enjoy not just the process of inputting, but also seeing how their information racks up against those of their peers or that of their peers.
I was at your website this morning, and I saw an interest in healthcare IT. And if you look at my last 100 shows, the shows where I talk about healthcare IT get pretty good ratings. I mean, this is what people – I mean, it's obvious. I mean, find a parade, get in front of it. When it comes to healthcare IT and doing surveys, there are some rules like HIPAA. And so if you try to do so I'm John Gilroy Software, and I say I want you to survey at the 167 VA hospitals – and ask them about a specific procedure or an IT issue. Are there HIPAA rules that you have to comply with, or where does that all fit in?
Well, typically the surveys that we generate are focused on IT issues in healthcare. So, sure, you have to be cognizant of information, but, I mean, as long as you post a disclaimer explaining to people what their how their information is going to be used, I think you're good. I do think that the whole survey business and the whole data business is on the edge of a complete revolution. And I'm sure you've heard about big data, but the ability to get better information of what's happened historically from sensors and then compile that in such a fashion that you can predict with greater certainty what's going to happen going forward is a really exciting trend.
I bet if you interviewed 100 CIOs, they'd say, I don't want big data. I want better data. If it's big, fine. I don't care. I want to be able to make decisions more accurately, and especially when it comes to healthcare IT. I mean, imagine all those medical sensors that are out there, all those devices, just all those big data piling up and piling and piling up. I can throw out my arms and go, so what? And
I think you've got to be very careful with big data, in as much as just because there's a correlation between two numbers, it doesn't mean, say, that cause and effect is established between those two factors. So I think your point is well made. What people want is small data. They want the right data.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Maybe right, more defined, the right data. Yeah. Right.
But big data allows you to get to the small data that's relevant. And what you want to make sure is that you don't map a correlation as a cause and effect relationship.
Let's talk about timing. I'm sure if you conducted a survey last year, and you mentioned this in the previous block about a security problem with, I think it was data, what was the term you used?
Data loss prevention.
Data loss prevention. Yeah. So we look back in time and we do data loss prevention survey and not much response. All of a sudden, post Snowden, you do it, there's a lot more interest in that. I imagine a lot of your surveys, you really have to be careful about the timing. And when you describe the survey, you have to, okay, this was taken on the day after 9/11, and this was taken 2 weeks after Snowden. No, this is 2 weeks before Snowden. Is this any concern of yours when you do these surveys?
No, I think it's a great opportunity, actually. So, for example, we know that on Valentine's Day, reporters have to write the Valentine's Day story. And on Tax Day, they have to write the Tax Day story. We have the, you know, the Black Monday story or whatever it is after Black Friday, the Thanksgiving the holiday shopping day. So we know that on those days, people have got to try to provide some commentary on that. We just had the five-year anniversary of Lehman Brothers. So if you can look at those dates ahead of time, you can predict when something bad happens, what's the anniversary of that? If there's a new legislative mandate that comes out, is there a deadline associated with that? So I think what you want to do is look downstream at what news is going to be relevant, and then collect data to report against that milestone.
Let's talk more about timing here. So I'm with Gilroy Software, and we have a product that will help you with identity management. And what I want you to do, Steve, is conduct a survey based on that. How long? A week? 2 weeks? I mean, how long would something? Does it take 6 months? I mean, things are going to change quickly. But what's a timing or framework on something like this?
Well, I guess it depends on what you're trying to do, right? But typically we would say 12 to 16 weeks is a reasonable time frame.
For start and finish, that long? Wow. 16 weeks. And then the results are normally published. Are they available for free? Are they available online? Or where do you – I guess it depends on what you're surveying, huh?
Yes. I mean, it depends on what the objectives are. And typically our research is free. It's available online. And so the goal is to – provide new insight to the market. What you want to do is make sure that that information is disseminated to the market. So there's no sense in that circumstance to collect information and not disseminate it. Now, there may be other examples where we're interested in getting more insight about competitive positioning or some such, in which case, you know, that information may not be attributed.
No, just dawned on me. Distributed. Suppose you did a survey on a security problem, let's say encryption. And you started the survey 1 week before Snowden, and then it continued for 16 weeks. You'd almost have to stop and hit the reset button and start all over again, wouldn't you?
Absolutely correct.
Never thought, but when talk about timing and the calendar and events, I mean, some events are pretty easy to figure out, St. Patrick's Day, Christmas, but something event that happens in the middle of the survey, I imagine you must have terms and conditions of starting a survey saying, well, if something significant happens, we may have to restructure our questions.
Well, we had a conference. It was Innovation Nation down at the D.C. Convention Center a couple of years ago, and the tagline for that conference was Shake IT Up. And on that day, we were in the middle of the CIO session when the earthquake happened. Literally, you know, so it was called Shake It Up, and we had an earthquake right in the middle of the conference. And so if you were looking at a survey on continuity of operations, a disaster recovery, yes, the game totally changes.
Wow. I was in the studio that day, and I looked out, and I saw the National Cathedral shaking. So I was getting shook up, and you were trying to shake people up as well.
Yeah.
We're going to have to take a break and come back. Talk more about surveys in the federal government. I'd like to find out about how many questions are asked, how many questions should be asked. Is it one? Is it 80? Is it 100? And talk about the future of the survey and the value to my listeners. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Steve O'Keefe, founder of Meritalk and Mobile Work Exchange. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Steve O'Keefe. He's the founder of a company called Meritalk and Mobile Work Ethic. If you want more information about surveys and federal IT surveys, M as in Mary, Eritalk.com, Meritalk.com. Many of my students are on Twitter, and they tweet and go back and forth, and people actually get information on Twitter, and I'm sure you're active in that world. My Twitter handle is at Ray Gilroy. Do you have a Twitter handle? Your company or one of your many organizations have Twitter handles you want to talk about here?
We have Meritalk has a Twitter handle, and Mobile Work Exchange also has a Twitter handle. I once wrote a blog, a cup of IT, and the title of it was called Flipping Twitter the Bird.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's interesting trying to aggregate the data, but on a one-on-one basis, I'm not sure anyone would be really interested in following me on Twitter.
Well, you don't know that. You just don't know. I'm always fascinated by who I follow and who I don't follow. I'm following four women who are trying to swim the Strait of Gibraltar in Spain, and I'm following their workouts, and it's fascinating. I mean, of all the things to follow, I mean, you know, the silliest thing in the world. And but hey, you know, everyone's got different interests, and Twitter can be used professionally and I guess personally as well. This is the part in the show, Steve, where people listening to the show, they're scratching their head and they're going, well, I don't know if that guy's really a card carrying nerd or not. Or they're saying, boy, what a nerd he is. He'd bore me to tears at a party. And so what I do is I have a scientific 10-question survey that we will process in my UNIVAC computer and come up with a scientific result. And I never thought, you're the survey guy and I'm giving you a survey. So isn't this a twist here? Kind of turning the tables, as a British poet would say, huh? Turning the tables on you. First question, do you even own a desktop PC at home?
Yes, it just broke and we're replacing it with another desktop PC.
Wow, isn't that something? That's amazing. And how many cell phones have you purchased in the last 12 months?
None.
None. That's interesting too. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
No.
No. Okay. Do you have a personal blog?
I do. My cup of IT.
Okay, good. And do you use any online personal backup services?
I guess we back up photographs on the internet.
But you personally?
No.
No. Okay. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have an iPhone.
An iPhone. And how many apps in that iPhone have you used in the last, let's say, month?
None.
None. You're getting real weak in the nerd category here, Steve. You better buck up these answers. They're going to turn off the radio. And here's a new question. How many tablet devices do you have in your house? If I walked around your house this afternoon, how many would I find?
One, I think.
Just one. Wow, you're getting weak in the nerd scale. Social networking sites you participate in?
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn. And last book you read, was it electronic or was it paper?
It was paper.
I tell you what. My goodness gracious.
I should tell a better story, shouldn't I?
Yeah, 331 guests, and you're not even close to being a nerd. You're possibly a cool guy.
Oh.
That's a whole separate survey, though. The cool guy survey.
Not at all.
Wow. Not very good credentials for being a nerd. So maybe you might be fun at a party. You might be fun to have lunch with. But certainly can't talk about IPv6 and strengths and weaknesses of that or some more of these subtleties out there. It's interesting. Many of my listeners are scratching their heads and wondering, well, what's going to happen to this whole idea of surveys in the federal government? Is it all going to be online? What about telephone surveys? What about, U.S. mail surveys, face-to-face surveys at events? What good? What do you think? Where is this all heading in the next few years, Steve?
I think that the way we look at collecting data is going to change quite radically. And, we're all walking around with mobile phones, whether they're bought in the last 12 months or not. And they all have GPS devices in them. And so the ability to collect data on individuals is expanding exponentially. The question then begs, okay, well, is it relevant to have a census anymore? Could we collect that information from people's mobile phones if we could manage to identify, your age and other information about yourself, which would be collected from the mobile phone? If that information is anonymized, do we even need to do a census anymore? So, and obviously there are significant issues about privacy, and I think Snowden has, for better or worse, has exposed a whole series of other privacy issues. So I think, as we look at this big data focus, as we look at what people are, you talked about apps, what people are prepared to give up in order to obtain functionality, the whole game is going to change quite radically.
In the America here, when you took a statistics class, traditionally the first chapter would be the photograph of Truman holding up a newspaper with the study saying that he lost the election. He actually did, and it illustrates weaknesses in collecting data. I don't know if you learned that in Britain or not, but I'm sure what you did learn was that there's biases in data collecting, and if you only collect data from people with smartphones, what about the people who don't have smartphones? And what about the people who have four? I've seen people in here with two and three smartphones. So is that a valid way of collecting it, or do we put implants in everyone and collect data that way? I mean, there's some ethical questions that are coming up. You know, it's one thing to have all these technological capabilities, but all of a sudden these ethic questions come up and you go, whoa, 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 hold it right there, Steve. Now let's talk about what about this? What does this mobile device actually have, and can it be spoofed? And how valid are these results?
Well, I think we have to be careful when we collect information. You know, was it David Ogilvy said that advertising agencies use research like a drunk uses a lamppost, more for support than illumination. And so I think we have to be careful, but I think we also have to recognize that, you know, the world isn't necessarily fair. I was talking to a delegate in Virginia, in the Virginia House, just a couple of nights ago, and he said he lost his election to a Tea Party candidate, but only 2% of the electorate showed up to vote. So, you know, data is data, and, you know, we have to be careful about how we measure to make sure that what we're looking for is representative. And sometimes we don't want a representative sample.
And that's my concern when I see a Meritoc survey and it says about 52% or 61%. I think I'm just reassured in speaking with you that the sample wasn't biased and the sample is large enough to draw a conclusion. And the questions were asked in a reasonable manner. But, you know, we've all seen surveys, and you have too. I'm sure you have. And maybe some of your surveys are responsive. You nod your head and go, oh, boy, they have no idea.
Yeah, I think, you know, to clarify what I said, I mean, in terms of we don't want a representative sample, what I mean to say there is we don't want to speak to everybody if we're looking specifically at a highly technical topic. It's only relevant to speak to the people who understand about federal data centers. You know, I often use the conversation in a bar test here. If you can't have a conversation with somebody in a bar about something in terms of the fact that it's too technical for them to understand, then that says, I think, a lot about the topic you're discussing. So you can't go to speak to everybody. You have to try and find people that actually understand that topic for it to be relevant.
And then you have to, I guess, form or come up with the appropriate questions. I would think this may be 25% is just forming the questions. How much time is that? It's got to take a big chunk of time.
Yes, it absolutely does. You know, you need to go through various drafts on the surveys. You want to work out whether you're going to have an open-ended question, whether you're going to have a pull-down menu, what are the options in the pull-down menu, and the like. So, that's very important in terms of framing.
Do you have to worry about weighing questions for responses, or is that a concern at all?
I think you have to worry about weighing everything in terms of as you structure surveys, because, you know, if you don't balance things, then you can skew the results.
If you have an open-ended question versus a closed-ended question, and I'm looking at my little scientific survey I gave you.
Yeah.
What flavor of smartphone do you have? There's three options there. I mean, there's not four. There's probably 20 options out there, but there's really only three. And so I guess you have to consider that for everything in a rapidly changing technical space. I mean, what operating system do you use on your mobile phone? What about versions? I mean, that's a tricky question in and of itself.
Yeah, I think when you're looking for quantitative information, you're going to have, you know, maybe as many as seven or eight options and then other, and that will be open-ended. You can populate it. But, you know, when you report the results out, you're going to give the percentages of the main buckets, and then it would just be an other category, and you could drill down and try and find out what those responses were.
So when you hire people to conduct surveys, do you look for English majors? Do you look for statisticians? Do you look for people who've done social research? I mean, what kind of people do you hire to conduct these surveys?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, statisticians, researchers. And interestingly enough, as you alluded earlier when we were offline, anthropology is an interesting topic.
Yeah.
I think, you know, as you look at what's happening, you know, librarians, statisticians, these are dying skills. Nobody's interested in those topics. Well, absolutely not true. Right. And as you know, as we get into some of this new data driven society, people are more and more interested, you know, things like metadata, how you tag data so it can be pulled. Librarians, very relevant.
Thank you very much for the interview, Steve. If you want more information, you go to Meritalk, Meritalk, learn about surveys And I think it's opened up a lot of issues and questions that I've had about surveys and concerns and wondering if they're valid or not. And what's in it for me from the perspective of a federal IT professional? Is it going to help me in my career? Is it going to help others in this career? And I think there's the questions have been answered. You can listen to the show once again on the Internet if you want to. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest today, Steve O'Keefe, founder of Meritalk and Mobile Work Exchange.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.